This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Is there a civil war brewing in the Democratic Party? Bernie Sanders is ascendant. Some think he may sweep Super Tuesday or do very well or put himself in an inevitable position. That has some establishment Democrats shaking in their boots for the potential impact of that. We have two guests today. First, our primary guest for the day is Bennett Kelly. He's been active in Democratic politics for over 40 years. He was national co-chair of the Democratic National Committee's Young Professional Fundraising Outreach Arm back when he was a young professional during the Clinton era. And he's also an award-winning political columnist. Welcome to the show, Bennett.
Thank you.
And our other guest is Eric Bies. He is a Bernie Sanders supporter. We're going to start with him because he's at work, and I don't want to get him in trouble. He has a limited window to talk to us. But I had a very interesting conversation with Eric yesterday and found he has an interesting story. Real simple, Eric, why are you supporting Bernie Sanders?
Oh, thank you so much, Mike. I've been a Bernie Sanders supporter for quite some time now in the 2016 primaries as well, and continuing on from that. I've been a Bernie Sanders supporter, mostly on a moral ground. Also, what's going to benefit the most for the most Americans? Generally, income disparity right now has the majority of Americans living just paycheck to paycheck, and with a candidate that's supporting taking care of those individuals finally, instead of a side note like most candidates where those individuals will be considered before donors are considered. That is one of the main reasons I'm voting for Bernie Sanders.
You also had, when we spoke, you had a very personal story to tell about how that economic aspect has impacted you personally.
Correct. I've been a Bernie Sanders supporter, one on the Affordable Care Act when it first came out, and then also the opportunity for Medicare for All. Growing up, I was constantly in and out of the hospital. Father was a police officer, single parent. I had four open heart surgeries before the age of 14 with a mitral valve replacement when I was 14 years old, and then a heart attack my freshman year of college. I consistently watched my father pour over insurance forms almost every night, constantly trying to figure out bills, how he was going to pay for everything, and consistently watching the cost of healthcare grow to the point when I was in college, I had a heart attack, was surrounded by bills and student loan debt going into trying to pay for even medications. I currently work in the healthcare field. I even know that the possibility of Medicare for All could cost me my job. I'm willing to part with that and go job hunting.
Cost your job because you're working on the administrative side.
Correct. I'm actually a care guide where I actually listen to, I speak to these members every day that have our health insurance, consistently worried about their deductibles, how they're going to make payments, the rise of insulin costs, the rise of prescription costs. I have pretty much people in tears on the phone with me every single day. And my goal is to try and find a way to circumvent whatever paragraphs or reason why we can get their claims covered or why they can't be, or how to get their prescription assistance if we can't assist it, other ways for them to do it. My whole goal is to make basically my dad's job that he had to fret by himself every night. It's my job now to make sure these parents don't have to have the same do-it-by-yourself mentality that my dad had to have when I was growing up.
And Bernie's support Medicare for All is what gravitated you towards him.
Correct. That's kind of the biggest one. I spent most of the time in children's hospital seeing sick kids and crying parents. And if there's any way that can ease those parents from being that upset, this is definitely a way to do it.
Final question for you, Eric.
Sure.
Let's say your guy, Bernie's doing real well right now, but we are within moments of having results in South Carolina, and there will be within a matter of 3 days, Super Tuesday, where we're going to know a lot more. Things could change. If your guy does not get the nomination, does the Democrats still have your support?
Yeah, that's one misconception that I'm so upset with. And a lot of people said a lot of Bernie supporters say if he doesn't get the ticket, they're not going to vote. I've spoken to countless people. I'm a stand-up comedian. I speak to people on all liberal sides all the time. Every person I know from the first primaries, the moment Hillary got it taken away from Bernie and spots, I voted for Hillary. I rode my bike 2.5 miles to go put down that check mark for Hillary's name, just because I knew it was more important getting that person in than the person that's currently in office. And I would do the same, but my goal is to make sure the person that I want this time isn't circumvented by people that get a lot of money from people well off more than me.
Okay, Eric, thank you very much for your time. Hope we don't get you in trouble with your job, and we appreciate your perspective here.
Not at all. Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Take care. Okay, Bennett, I wonder if you react to this.
I can understand the personal story and why he may find it appealing. I mean, Medicare for All sounds great. I think it's interesting that he's even willing to support it, even though it could cost him his job.
You got to respect that. Here's somebody who's willing to put his personal economic status at risk over a principle.
No, very much so. And I can see the appeal of it. It's a great slogan. He just finally released some of the numbers behind it. And as was mentioned during the debate, while Sanders keeps mentioning how this is comparable to other state systems in Canada and Denmark and elsewhere, it's actually the only proposal that would eliminate private insurance. And so that's one problem that we're seeing with it, and that really hasn't been vetted. And we haven't really seen how the numbers are going to add up. I've seen different statements by him that it will include premiums because Medicare improves premiums. And yet he's campaigning on Medicare for All it's going to be free. And we're trying to figure out what the tax aspect is going to be, who's going to pay what for it. I think moving towards universal health care should be a goal of Democrats. The problem I have with Bernie's proposal and Medicare for All in general is it's a great bumper sticker. But, to go back quite a few elections, where's the beef? How are you going to do it? How are you going to pay for it? And that's the problem that I generally have with the Medicare for All, is that it's going to be too expensive. And we should probably focus on something that's more doable, because this is not support for that in the United States Senate.
Well, I think that's probably the biggest one is it doable? I mean, and let's separate out two things. Universal health care is one thing. That's taking our existing system and taking Obamacare, which went a huge way in the direction of expanding care. But there's still some missing gaps. And making sure that anybody can get into the system, that's the minimum, I think, I think every Democrat on the stand wants that.
Right.
The Medicare for All has an aspect that freaks some people out, which is, wait a minute, you're going to take away my private health care insurance before I know what the alternative is. I don't think people love their private health care insurance. Most of them hate it because you spend your life fighting with insurance companies, but you're messing with people's health care, and they want to have a pretty good idea if you take something away, what's going to replace it.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's generally true. People, insurance companies. It reminds me of a poll about who do you trust more, Donald Trump or gas station sushi. And I think insurance companies would kind of be along that type of line.
People love their doctors. They hate their insurance companies.
Right. Although, I mean, I have met people who do like their insurance companies. Right now my wife is battling cancer, and to be in our program is very good, and I don't think she would want to leave that program. So, there are people who are comfortable with their insurance
until you get a claim denied, then all bets are off. We will return in a more analytical sphere and talk about what the likely impact of a Bernie Sanders nomination would be on Democratic prospects and other related issues when we return with Bennett Kelly here in just a moment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're discussing the prospect of a Sanders nomination, what that might do to the Democratic Party in the country. And we're here with Bennett Kelly, who is a longtime Democratic activist, Clintonista, I think, is a fair description, at least of a lot of his career. He's supported more than one Clinton. Bennett, there seems to be two theories of this election. The first theory is the traditional left-right continuum theory. There's people on the left, there's people on the right, there's people in the middle. And the way you win elections, if you're a Democrat, is to move off the left towards, as far as you can get, towards the center to pick up the votes in the center. The Republicans do the same thing. Their natural strength is in the right, but the more they move to the center to pick up those moderate votes there, the more likely they are to win. Richard Nixon expostulated this, but he was hardly alone. That's theory right. One, that is the traditional theory. Theory two is a more recent theory. It says there is no center. It's all about enthusiasm. You win elections by cranking up large crowds of highly motivated voters. Clearly, that's what, if theory one was 100% correct, Donald Trump, that theory told us Donald Trump had no chance of being elected because he was off to the right and in crazy land in a lot of respects. The one thing that is hard to ignore is the commonality. The one thing that Trump and Sanders have in common is they crank out large, enthusiastic crowds that dwarf the crowds in both size and enthusiasm of any other candidate. Fair statement?
Yeah, I think it's true. Although, Trump also transcends left-right.
Yeah, he's not a traditional right guy, though he's given the right everything they wanted.
Exactly.
And initially, the right was very suspect of him because they're saying Donald Trump is not a real conservative, and I don't think is instinctively he is. He just cut a deal with them to give them everything they wanted.
Right. I mean, for example, he said, you're going to have great health care under me. And, I love the environment. I love the gays. I love, basically everything. Then he governed the exact opposite way.
Yeah, he throws these things out, but they're disconnected. He says, you're going to get great health care. And then you discover there isn't even a plan for that.
Right.
And there isn't even a shell of a plan. And he signed on to Mitch McConnell's desire to sabotage Obamacare. I would like to make an interesting point, though, about health care and Obamacare. When they were putting in Obamacare, the Republicans tried to scare people because when you're dealing with their health care, people are very easily scared because it's real, real important. And they said this Obamacare is going to come along and it's going to totally change the health care that you got. And the country was 50-50 on Obamacare for that reason. Then they put it in. And some people noticed a change for the better. Other people noticed no change and a negative to basically nobody. And now the interesting thing is that Obamacare that 8 years ago was this ogre that was going to destroy health care is the absolute and when the Republicans attack Obamacare, they lose. They lose. And so they have to pretend that they're not really doing that. We've created a new status quo. The status quo is Obamacare. Nobody's going to repeal that.
Which actually makes William Kristol very prescient then, because remember his memo opposing, Hillary care in the 90s saying, once this gets passed,
you're never going to take it away.
Yeah.
Which is like to go back in history. Social Security was this socialism that was going to destroy America. Now everybody
owes socialism.
Medicare was going to destroy in the 1965 era was going to destroy America, and then the doctors hated it. And of course, after Medicare, what happened was doctors' income shot through the stratosphere, and they loved it, and everybody over 65 got good health care. Once you put these programs in, they're untouchable, which is why the Republicans were in a panic to kill Obamacare in the crib, because they knew the day it got out of the crib, you would never be able to touch it again.
Right.
So
that's true. Yeah.
So I think that's what Bernie's missing on this one, which is that the problem is the interim thing. Don't take away things from people. What you do, you want to get Medicare for all. What you do is you create a choice for everybody to get into Medicare, and then you watch people to vote with their feet.
So I got my start in politics through Claiborne Pell and
Senator from Rhode Island.
Yes, who gave us Pell Grants. Mm-hmm. And Pell Grants today are a massive, program. I forget how many, billions are spent on it, but it's huge. But it started off as just a small pilot program under Nixon. And Pell was, and it actually is part of his farewell address in the Senate in 1996. His motto, one of his mottos was, half a loaf can feed an army. And basically his view was, get something. Once you get something, you will always get more. That's how government programs work.
You get the something, and then the next day you turn around and say, let's nibble for another slice.
Right. And if you look at some of these programs today that may have been tiny pilot programs, it shows you how effective that can be. But the flip side, from a conservative point of view, it's like, damn, if you hate big government, you got to kill these things at the start.
Once they're in, they get popular. People see the benefits, and the scare stuff doesn't work. We'll be back with Bennett Kelly. We'll talk further strategy 2020 election. We're on the within hours of hearing results in South Carolina. We'll talk about that and what's upcoming here in the think tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back with Bennett Kelly, an old-time Democratic politico, and discussing the ascendancy of Bernie Sanders and the what-if question. If Bernie Sanders gets the nomination, what happens, or what happens if he doesn't? And I want to deal with the latter for just a moment. There's a really interesting book just came out, written by Charlotte Alter. And it's about millennials, being those born between about 1980 and 1996. They grew up in an era of terrorism, of the financial crisis, assorted wars. They were excited. They were the group most excited by Barack Obama. They showed up to vote for him. They believe in systemic change, not small level change. And here's the interesting thing about them, according to her book, with them, voting is an act of love, not duty. In other words, you got to fall in love with somebody to vote for them. And they don't buy the alternative. They don't really, they're tough to sell with the argument of, well, they're way better than the alternative. By the way, the other things about them, with this group, so the word socialism has no sting. When you say socialism, they think Northern Europe. They have no recall of the Soviet Union. Communism is some theoretical thing that happened in the distant past. Very, very different reaction you'd get with this group and other groups. The implication of all of this is they are big Bernie supporters, and they may not be willing to it's not all or nothing. Significant numbers of them may not vote for the Democratic ticket if their guy, who is Bernie, doesn't get the nomination. And there's evidence from the data of 4 years ago for this. What do you think?
I think it's true. I've seen between a third and a half won't vote. And part of the problem is actually the Bernie campaign. The way Bernie campaigns is, I am for this great thing. I'm going to give you all these, free stuff, these bumper sticker proposals that sound great, but I can't really tell you what the details are. And everyone's like, yeah.
It's very Trumpian, though, isn't it? I mean, Trump's going to give us the greatest health care in the world. Turns out he had zero plan whatsoever.
Exactly.
I'm going to build the wall. Mexico's going to pay for it. I mean, who in their right mind believe that? Obviously, they're for very different things, but yeah. Boy, isn't it the same playbook?
It is. It has. I think that has to, the Mexico part has to be the most audacious, I think, campaign pledge in modern history. But the other aspect of the Bernie campaign is that those that oppose Bernie are corrupt.
Yeah.
You're seeing it in the criticisms of people who booed Bernie at the arena the other night, that you know, those were must have been billionaire donors when you know no tickets were sold. I'm friends with a number of ardent Bernie supporters, and any of their opponents. For example, the talking point this week is that Pete Buttigieg is a corporate tool. A month ago, he was called a militarist because he had apparently been in the military. So, you know, it's not just that Bernie is great. It's that everybody else
is evil. Yeah.
Yeah. And so how do you get people to make that bridge? And so I think we should assume we're going to lose a lot of those people. And
that means non-Bernie Democrat to win, that would mean they got to pull a whole bunch of moderate, disaffected Republican, this whole thing.
Yes.
We've offered the suburban Republican women who are kind of appalled by Trump on a for any number of reasons.
And who went with us in 2018. That's how we won.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's the problem. I've had a number of people, and I've seen this, you know, played out where other people mentioning the same thing, where they say, Bennett, we will support, you know, a Democrat. And then these are Republicans or independents. We will support a Democrat as long as it's not some crazy like Bernie Sanders. And
sometimes they say, or Elizabeth Warren.
That is true.
But less often. Less often. Warren, I think, is more acceptable. But
right.
But then Sanders, but less than most of the other candidates.
Right. And that's why I think if it gets to a second ballot, Warren may have viability if she can make it to the convention.
Oh, I see that. A number of scenarios, and we can talk more about this in our final segment, but I could see Bernie going to the convention with 35% or 40% of the delegates, clearly right. More than any other person. And Warren is still there. She's definitely not running second. She's running third or fourth, but she might be the
right.
only one that's acceptable to the Bernie people and the other. She could be the compromise candidate.
Right. That'll stop a riot.
Yeah. I could see the Bernie people going to her. I can't see them going to anybody else.
True.
So, and
this question, though, then is either if that's not the solution, and Bernie can't get a majority, then you're going to have a very disruptive convention.
The superdelegates who only vote in the second round, not the first.
Right.
But if Bernie has 40%, that might keep him from winning again, but that doesn't give it to anybody else.
No.
Especially if we don't get into a two-person race. And, you know, it looks like you're going to have several candidates that are collecting delegates. And,
you will. And that's the befuddling part. I mean, my understanding is Bloomberg got into this race to try to stop Bernie. But what he's doing is dividing Biden's vote. Yeah. If Bloomberg and some of the other candidates, you know, the Amy and Mayor Pete, after South Carolina, where you see Biden has resuscitated his campaign, if they got out, you could have a story where the headline is Biden sweeps Super Tuesday, because you know that lane gets close to a majority or close to majority in most states.
Yeah, except you can't make assumptions. They're always clean about second choice, because I see
a lot of the
Bernie constituency and the Warren constituency. You might think ideologically they are very, very close, but they're not the same people.
Right.
Warren attacks more educated, older, you know, highly educated is probably the lock that she has, whereas Bernie has the young.
That's true. But even assuming he gets a substantial part of that, Biden would sweep Super Tuesday with a couple of exceptions.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. Let's see three scenarios here. First of all, this is Nate Silver did this, and he's under three sets of assumptions about South Carolina. He says three assumptions. One is Biden has a big win. 2, Biden has a small win. 3, Biden is Biden loses. Biden, big win. He still ends up with, after Super Tuesday, he's got Sanders with 39% of the delegates, Biden 29. If Biden has a small win, he's got Sanders 42-24 over Biden. If Biden loses, he has Sanders at 50 and Biden at 15.
I'm thinking of the headline the day after Super Tuesday. With everyone else in the race, Sanders can eke out narrow wins in a lot of states. And so, you know, Sanders technically wins, you know, 6-7 states on Super Tuesday, albeit by a few points. You know, the headline is Sanders sweeps Super Tuesday.
But he doesn't get even half of the delegates because the 15% rule, and you got the delegates spread around. He gets more delegates than anybody else. And the thing is, I don't think no candidate ever needed 50% to get nominated. If you get 45, the delegates will jump over one another. You have to get close. At 40, it's a little tougher. If it was 40-20 or so, but it's liable to be 40 to a bunch of other people, none of whom are even close to 40.
Right.
And then this is where I think the Sanders people could get really. So if you have that scenario, Bernie has 40%, nobody else has more than 20 because it's spread around several candidates, and they end up giving the nomination to somebody other than him, then you could have lots and lots of disaffected people. It could be more intense.
Yes. Well, you had him at last time, and you know, he clearly lost by 4 million votes. So if he actually got the most votes and doesn't get the nomination, they're going to be furious.
I think one thing is different, though, that I think you have a pretty good argument. The DNC 4 years ago had their finger on the scale, and they've been hands off this time. So they had that resentment.
Well, I mean, the debate structure, yes, wasn't advantageous. But yeah, I don't think that affected votes. I don't think it affected people going to the ballot box in California and New York and other places where Hillary won, hands down.
But perception of fairness, you know, that you had Wasserman Schultz there, who was an avid Hillary supporter, and she was trying to do what she could. Well, and you understand why that was, because the assumption was before the whole thing started is Hillary's going to win this thing. She's the de facto nominee right now. I'm talking 2016. So basically want to gear ourselves up to help her as much as we can in November. They didn't really expect that Bernie would give or anybody else would give a serious challenge.
I mean, he got in at, 2%?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was not expected. Well, we will return in just a moment for a final segment. We're talking with Bennett Kelly about our political prospects and particular Democratic nomination scenarios. We'll return in just a moment in the think tank.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are here for final segment with Bennett Kelly, who has been active in Democratic Party politics for over 40 years, former national co-chair, Democratic National Committee's Young Professional Groups. Looking at this whole election so far, I know you've got, Bennett, you've got some concerns about a Sanders nomination. But, you know, at this moment, we've had 3 contests. Bernie's won 2 of these convincingly, had a virtual tie in the 3rd. Within a few hours, we'll have the result of the South Carolina primary, which I think is the last primary for which momentum is really at stake. Starting on next Tuesday, which is Super Tuesday, it's going to be all about delegates. And on Super Tuesday, we have more than a third of the delegates are going to be awarded. You know, an AP NORC poll after the New Hampshire primary showed Sanders with the best favorability of all the Democrats over any other candidates. And there are, however, alarms being sounded, and I know you're one of them. What's your concern about a Sanders nomination?
Well, keep in mind, one, Hillary did not go negative against Bernie, because she didn't feel that she needed to and was comfortable winning. Excuse the noise in the background. There's some construction in the next building. Secondly, think about John Kerry in 2004. And he was a war hero, and the Republican attack machine made that a liability. And so here you have Bernie Sanders, who really hasn't had tough vetting on the attack ad stage, and he is about to get hit with all his past statements praising Castro. And supposedly there's a video of him at he admits that he was at this rally. He was the only American to go to a rally for the Sandinistas' anniversary. And where at that rally, they were singing Yankee Must Die. And he called that rally patriotic. And then he's on, they have quotes by him defending the state of emergency imposed by Nicaragua, where they shut down journalists and free press and arrested dissidents. And he said, sometimes undemocratic means are necessary in revolutions. His pro-Castro stuff, his pro-Russia stuff, Soviet Union stuff, he went there on his honeymoon, legalizing heroin. I mean, there's a whole slate of things that I think that he's just, his negatives are going to shoot up.
Including some of which is, if you look at the ruckus over what he said over Cuba, is it turned an issue even on something that's true. If you dissect what he said, he says, Castro's a brutal dictator. He's a bad guy. He did help the Cuban people in terms of education and medical care. And I tell you, I spent weeks there and I've been there twice, including earlier this year. And that statement is absolutely true. It doesn't make Castro a good guy, but it is true that it's a highly educated possibility and they have very good health care. This is a poor country and they have a longer life expectancy than we do in the U.S. So that's a system that's working. That doesn't make Castro a good guy. That doesn't excuse anything else. But it's still, even though my point is, even he's making a true statement that can be used against
him.
And look at
called him a model.
Yeah,
he said it was a model society.
Yeah.
So you're going to have tax ads. But let's take that point. You're saying it's a true point. So right now in Florida, according to the latest polls, he's at 13%. You have the Florida Democratic Party already distance themselves from him. And that's a swing state.
A critical swing state, yep.
Right. And so kind of giving you an analogy, go back to the early 2000s when President Bush and your local hero, John McCain, were battling over the issue of torture. And Bush was saying, Democrats are soft on terrorism. And we had to come back with nuance, and nuance is always much more difficult, harder to get out than the simple attack statement.
Right. And you're against torture. So that means you're for terrorists.
And bingo.
Yeah.
And so here, yes, there's nuance. Castro did do some good and this, but Sanders' statement came right after a crackdown on dissent. That was because Cuba was preparing for a visit from Mikhail Gorbachev. And so to be so laudatory about a country calling it a model at that time is really reckless. Yes, he may have nuance. He may say this and that. You really have to understand. But nuance doesn't happen in fall campaigns.
Yeah, nuance is lost in attack ads.
Exactly. And so I've tried to debate this with some of my fellow Democrats. They're like, well, no, but you have to understand. I'm like, no, there is no such thing as understanding in a fall campaign. So he's just going to get buried alive. I don't think it's going to be a McGovern 49-state sweep, but I see a potential for a 39-state or 40-state sweep for Trump.
Scary stuff to Democrats.
And particularly when, for how many 3.5 years now we've been saying, this is a moment of crisis. This is the election that, is a moral imperative that we win. And then to see our party just get in a circular firing squad is very distressing.
Well, what about the alternative theory? I mean, you're kind of basing that on traditional left-right. They're going to throw the kitchen sink. What about the alternative theory? The Bernie guys are enthusiastic. Young people are going to turn out in great numbers.
So it's a couple of things. We're relying on the segment of the population that historically has been the worst at turning out.
Except in 08. They came out in 08.
Okay. Yeah, so we're relying on that. We're relying on a revolution, he says, that's in the making, that has yet to materialize. He hasn't really created this revolution. There hasn't been any huge turnout increase for him, despite the fact he's been running for 6 years. Mm-hmm. The candidates he backed in 2018 mostly lost. It was the moderate candidates that won in 2018. I mean, the indications are all the other way. In fact, I just saw an article recently about a race in Minnesota where you had somewhat of a swing district, and you actually had a Iraq veteran and pro, expanding health care. And somehow, because he supported, Colin Kaepernick's right to kneel during the national anthem, he was the Trump candidate, made him a pro-terrorist Democrat, and that guy prevailed. And so in the highly charged, Trump is going to make it a very charged environment. I'm not confident at all, and I'm terrified of what could happen. I get that we could get this huge turnout wave. It's just the evidence so far is that it hasn't happened.
I think the other thing that's implicit in a lot of your comments is you've observed, and I think correctly, that nobody's really done a hit job on Sanders yet, such as will happen in November. It's not going to happen in the Democratic primary because essentially nobody wants to alienate the Sanders supporters. They're going to need him in November.
Right.
So it's kind of kid glove. I mean, they got a little testy with one another, but it's really low grade debate stuff. Not really heavy duty. Last comment, you got 30 seconds.
I just go back to looking at Michael Dukakis, who I had lunch with this week, and he had a huge lead going into the fall.
17 points.
Yeah, and I remember telling someone, no one could blow a 17-point lead. Well, guess what? That shows what the attack machine can do.
And that's why, even though the polls show Sanders right now beating Trump, that's prior to the attack machine.
Exactly.
Yep.
They're not going to recognize Bernie Sanders by November.
Okay. Thanks, Bennett. Always good to
Always
have you
pleasure.
On.
Always a pleasure.
It's good to have you on. We'll be back next week. We're going to be talking next week about policing in Phoenix. Been a hot topic. We'll have some of the principals who are involved in this joining us next week in the think tank. Call them on.